Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association. And you see DSM-4 here. It just followed DSM-3. And the definition for what society thinks we are, what psychiatry thinks we are, what medicine thinks we are, is pathological gambler. Now why? We have a disorder of impulse control, my friends. We're in the medical books. Pathologic gambling. Now, impulse disorder. Look at number one. Number one. We're number one on the impulse disorder. Pathologic gambling. Characterized by chronic preoccupation with urges to gamble. Cross off gamble and put in handicapping the horses. You cannot very well go to the races with a thorough set of readouts, with a thorough set of corollaries, with a firm decision as to what your betting will be, unless you meet this criterion. You've got to be preoccupied with what you're doing. You can't just pick it out of the air or just do it casually. It's a preoccupation, at least for the while you're doing it, and therefore we're called pathologic. Now, according to them, horse playing, if you'll pardon the expression, handicapping the horses, wagering on the horses, is identical to gambling in a casino. That is absolutely not true. And I've spent many years trying to convince this group of psychiatrists that it's not true. Ours is a cognitive effort. Ours is an effort based on facts that we can peruse from the racing form or our download. We are not gambling. We are investing. When I say we, I'm talking about those of us who are serious. There are thousands of horse players who do gamble. There's no difference between what they do and gamble because they are not assembling a viable set of variables and utilizing them properly. They're gambling. Let us pray we're not. In order to discuss this subject, in order to peel away more and more of the outside of this onion, we're going to use a discipline in psychology known as transactional analysis. The reason we're using it is because Eric Byrne, when he formed it, decided to take all the major schools of psychology and psychiatry and reduce their terminology to terminology that was understandable, totally understandable by any layman who was at least semi-literate. One of the big books from transactional analysis was Born to Win. In fact, Born to Win is the whole philosophy of transactional analysis. You're born a prince, and only by life's exigencies are you turned into a toad, and by properly peeling away the onion, you can all be prince and princesses again. Now, I don't appeal to the masses. I don't intend to appeal to the masses, because the masses of people in this field are horse players. I don't care much for horse players, because they play you and other successful handicappers work. Andy Byers said this. He said, Sartin's presentation was the dynamics of incremental velocity and energy distribution. And truthfully, he said, nobody ever accused Doc Sartin of trying to pander to a mass audience, and that is true. Never have pandered to a mass audience. Don Brohammer said, I could have been rich, really rich, had I been willing to pander to a mass audience. In other words, lie to the masses, give them some hocus-pocus, easy-to-use procedure, take their money, and go to Brazil. I prefer the philosophy of Albert Einstein. He said, great spirits have always encountered violent opposition. They've always encountered violent opposition from mediocre minds, like horse player minds. The fact of the matter is that when innovative thinkers introduce revolutionary and anti-establishment ideas, those people, well, they kind of think we're crazy. But what happens is when we introduce a new paradigm in our field, history ultimately proves us right. And we have about 1,000 winning handicappers in this organization. When I was originally called crazy, off my nut, history has proved us right because they are now winning both races and money. And this is a fact that I hope you will recognize, because if you don't, you're going to be relegated to a minority to the majority, I should say. You will not join the minority. You'll be relegated to the 98% majority, because only by going against the tide of mainstream horse player rules and prejudices can we make a profit. Barely 2% win consistently. 98% do not. So I ask you to dare to be different and win. Now we're going to use the language of transactional analysis, which is based on parent, adult, and child entities within ourselves. He took the language of Freud, which used id, ego, and superego, and he reduced it to something that was recognizable to all of us. We've all been a child. We all know the various different conflicts within being a child. We've all been an adult, hopefully. We know what the function of an adult should be. We've all either been a parent or we've had parents. Now, parents can be two different things, starting up at the top. They can be nurturing, which you see on the left, loving, kind. They change the diapers, they provide the food, they give the strokes. And I thought you were a sweet little baby, oochie-goochie-goo. But parents can also be disciplining, and sometimes in their disciplining they can be cruel and create cruel reactions from their children even when they don't intend to. They limit and they prohibit, and they try to teach what is right and wrong, but usually they're teaching what is right and wrong. Usually they're imposing limitations and prohibitions, which are based on the limitations and prohibitions inflicted upon them by their parents, our grandparents. Now, the adult is supposed to be unemotional, a pure computing, receiving of absolute information without distortion and giving of information. Well, the adult can become contaminated too because of many things which we'll discuss later. But technically, we compute in a business-like, objective manner. We intake information, we think, reflect on it, then we output that information without any distortion. Don't we wish? Now, the child is where we all live. When we think, when we dream, when we offer ourselves, or when we say anything, we do it in child, even though we might do it in a very adult, a very parental way, we still are in child. Now, it's wonderful. Part of that child, John Bradshaw makes a whole career out of talking about that child within. He's talking about the natural, imaginative, spontaneous, happy child, or the little professor within all of us. The little professor is smarter than the parent or the adult. The little professor knows things. You know about that. You knew a lot of things. A lot of those things got the onion folded over them. Little things we innately knew as a child. What did we do? We adapted to parental or in loco parentis injunctions, and we became adapted. When we adapt, we do that to get along. We adapt. Okay, I'll go along with it. How many people do you know? Well, I'll go along. I don't want to upset the apple cart. I don't want to argue. I'll just go along. Well, adaptation produces what all horse players seem to have, anxiety. God knows they've got a lot of anxiety, and especially prejudice. Prejudice. I know this. I know that. You can't tell me anything. I know. That's prejudice. And we act out these injunctions that we derive from adapting. Now, loser behavior emanates from the adapted child, from the child who just wants to get along, from the child who conforms to rules, from the child who has given up that little professor who thinks for itself. Read about loser behavior here. Now, rules are one of the most disastrous things in attempting to be a successful handicapper, an adaptation of rules. You ever buy a system or a method other than ours? They didn't have a set of rules. Rule one, rule two, rule three. They have rules. You cannot win by adapting of rules. Now, here's a little transaction that you may have heard about. A loser thinks there are rules for winning and losing. A winner, on the other hand, knows that every rule in a book can be broken, must be, in order to win, except one rule. And the one rule is, be who you are. Become all you were meant to be. That's the only winning game in the world. And until you adopt that loser attitude of being all you can be, you're just going to go on floundering, losing, or at best, not winning. Now, successful handicapping, even though we think in the child, even though we understand that parental, adult, don't do this, don't do that, we've got to get ourselves into an adult frame of mind, a completely computerized frame of mind, where we have no emotions, where we look at this thing in a purely intellectual, logical manner. By computing, we're businesslike, we're objective, truly objective, not subjective, as almost every horse player is subjective. We must organize our facts, list them, unless we have a computer to do it for us. We intake reality, we measure the validity of that, we think and reflect on it, we figure, and then our output is, supposedly, comes from that logical, sensible source, the adult. Now let's talk about information. I'm sure you've read a lot of books. You've probably been to a lot of lectures. You've probably heard other video and audio tapes. And of course you hear people around the track, always free with information. Let's take a look at this chart. It shows these two heads and talk about paths of information and how they affect us. When we get mixed multiple bits of information, you ask this fellow, hey, well, how do you handle grass horses going on the dirt? Or how do you handle this race because it was wet today, it was taken off the turf and put on the dirt? Or any one of a multitude of questions that you ask people, and you get multiple answers. Here's what happens. With mixed messages, information hits your ear, which regardless of which ear, and they create resistance. You hear one thing from one person, one from another source, one from this book, one from that book, and it creates resistance. Maybe you aren't aware that you're resisting, but you're saying, yeah, but he said, but you said, but I said, but they said, and you have no definitive answer. And most people, when that hits their inner brain, when that hits the cognitive level of their brain, it's distorted. Completely distorted. See it? Wiggly line down the middle? Distortion. Well, theoretically, we're supposed to be able to sort out that distortion and come to a correct answer, but if most horse players did that, then 98% of them would not be losers. So apparently that doesn't seem to work, especially with a horse player mind. A horse player mind which incidentally has already been corrupted by society saying that gambling is evil and all gamblers lose. That doesn't mean, oh, going to Vegas is fine, we're going over there to play. Or going to the race is fine, we're going over there to play. But you tell someone that you're actually doing it for the purposes of augmenting or making a living, and then you're in trouble. Then you're socially output. Now the highway to success with information is to have constant messages. Messages that are absolutely in concert with each other, that are not in disagreement. We're always going to find some little bit of thing to disagree with. That's natural, that's human nature. We're not going to agree even with a constant message, so we're going to have, as it says on this first line to the right and to the left, weak resistance, no matter what anybody tells you. Somebody give you the Ten Commandments. Somebody give you the Sermon on the Mount. You're still going to have some weak resistance to something that's said. Believe it. But when you only have weak resistance, and when the messages are consistent, you will only have a minimum amount of distortion for your inner mind to work out and function. Now, games are defined as a series of ongoing transactions. This is based on the best-selling book by Dr. Byrne. His definition, a series of ongoing transactions, meaning talking back and forth or behaving interpersonally with someone, which have concealed motivation. Now, how often do you engage in conversation without some concealed motivation? acknowledge it. That leads progressively to a well-defined payoff. We always seem to want a payoff when we have a discussion. We have to be have the last word, get the upper hand. Now, it's an analysis of ulterior transactions. In other words, transactions that come from some inner reason, and they always lead to a payoff. There are several other definitions, several other interpretations on this page. Now, let's not worry about the games people play in life games. I'm not here to try to do any therapy on life problems, even though sometimes when you get enough therapy and benefit from therapy and handicapping, it does alter lives. We've had many people say that handicapping was just the top of the iceberg, that in learning how to be a game-free handicapper, they became game-free in life. That's good. Let's talk about the most insidious, the number one horse player game, and it goes like this. Who do you like? Now, who do you like may not just be the overt walking up to someone and saying, who do you like, or who do you like, or whatever. It can be hidden ulteriorly in things like constant asking of questions. What do you think of this horse? Or what do you think of that post position? Or what do you think of this? Or what do you think of that? Or how would you handle this situation? Every time a person runs up a situation of which they feel insecure about, because they have no confidence, because they haven't had a set of corollaries they've used, and for various other reasons, they say, well, how would you do this? Okay, here's the way that transaction goes. Call it who do you like, call it any variation of who do you like. It's a second degree hard form of why don't you, yes, but. In other words, helpless, you're playing helpless. Do me something. Do me something. In all three forms, they're on this page. Now, here's how it happens. Let's say that you say, who do you like? And the rescuer, that's the rescuer, playing a drama triangle. Now, the three positions on that drama triangle, as developed by Steve Karpman. The rescuer, the guy who comes to your aid, the guy you ask the questions. Now, rescuers as doctors and psychiatrists, psychologists, policemen, firemen, etc., that's a natural position. That's what they're hired to do. But the human rescuer that stands out there and you say, who do you like? Here's what happens. He offers you a selection. It wins. Or in many cases, you offer a selection, the person says, I wouldn't bet that horse with your money. But let's assume number two down here, it wins. Now the victim keeps coming back until that rescuer does lose. Now the victim turns into a persecutor, turns the rescuer into a victim, and then the rescuer then becomes a persecutor, and he says, gee, what are you getting mad at me for? Look at all the good horses I gave you. And the game goes on, and it's a terrible game. Losing gambler game number two, and boy, does this happen to me a lot. I just don't understand. Words like, what do you mean early pay, sustain, what's sustained mean? What is factor X? What do you mean by entropy? I never heard anybody use entropy. What are fractals? What is this? What is that? I don't understand. True translation, I won't understand. Can't means won't, don't means won't. The reason people won't understand, is it because it constitutes a lexicon, a terminology that they haven't heard before, they don't use in everyday life? That's a game. You contradict all I know. You don't agree with what other teachers have taught me. You don't use the same language. Therefore, I don't understand. Hey, look, when you were a kid, your daddy or mommy took you down to the ocean. They said, look, son, that's an ocean. From that day forward, you knew what an ocean was. You saw the waves breaking on the sand. You did not ask what the salt content was, how many fish are in it, how big is it, what's this, that. That was an ocean. Subsequently, you got taken to see a lake, and pretty soon you knew what a lake was. The victim is always the person who says, but I don't understand. Then when you try to explain it, every word of explanation used creates a new I don't understand, because that person has put themselves permanently in the position of victim. I don't understand. It's too complex for me. Hundreds of variations of that same game. Get off that game. It doesn't matter whether you know the exact meaning of a word. Understand what that word means in context with how you're being asked to use it in order to win. Now we get to the confidence part. And this really hurts me. See, confidence comes from having done it, from having been successful, from knowing you're going to be successful because you have a set of values, a vital, viable variables you know win consistently. This letter that I received from a well-known, very well-known, famous book-writing handicapping expert reflects what I say is the essence of no confidence. I'm not going to give you his name, but I don't believe in doing exposés of people, even though this person did. He says, thanks for sending me the note and your favorable comments. In the interest of honesty, however, I must confess that 1996, this was written in April 26, 1997, 1996, I was minus 2% on my action for the year, a small loss, but a loss nonetheless. Thus far, I'm 4.7 lifetime ahead. But listen to this. This is a pitiful phrase. And I hope you never are in a position to make it. You never know when a permanent downturn could occur. That coming from a well-known book writing, lecturing expert, that's totally lack of confidence. You know what it is? It's ego. When you depend solely on your ego and you have a downturn, that's subjective visual perception handicapping gone awry. You'll never have to be able to say, you never know when a permanent downturn could occur, if you're using a computer with a viable program in it. Somebody then, after this person wrote several exposés denouncing virtually everything, he wrote him an internet. It's right here. What works? He said, I wrote, and I left his name out, asking why he didn't feature handicapping methods that work rather than those that don't, and his answer was, because there aren't any. Good God, are we faced with a group of experts who make their living selling newsletters and methods and stuff, who themselves say there aren't any? Folks, that is the lowest form of lack of confidence, of lack of direction that I've ever heard of. Confidence. Confidence comes from focus and determination, from believing in what you're doing, from believing in yourself, and from being game-free. Stop playing the game of poor little me, or I don't understand. Stop playing those games, or who do you like, or what would you think I ought to do? That kind of a game. Straightforward. Overt interpersonal communications between individuals functioning in a free child ego state. Hey, the little professor, exchanging of good ideas, exchanging positivity. And you're guided by adult, your ability to logic and reason. Cathected. Cathected, all that means is connected. Can you connect yourself instantly without any ego state you want? Can you, when you're whining and groaning and suddenly say, hey, wait a minute, that's wrong, bang, connect yourself now to an adult state or to a free, happy child state? Or when necessary, when things are going wrong and you have to be a bit parental, can you immediately connect yourself to a parental state, say, no, that's not right, don't do that? Free cathexis is absolutely necessary. Next subject, scripts. Does anybody out there deny that we are scripted individuals, that we didn't just spontaneously start doing the things we do. Somewhere along the line, we were scripted. Here's how it's described by Byrne and his cohort Claude Steiner. A life plan based on a decision made in childhood, reinforced by parents or in loco parentis, authority figures, justified by subsequent events, and culminating in a chosen alternative. The script determines a person's ultimate outcome, a decision made by the child between his own autonomous needs and the expectations of his parents, expectations of someone, parents, society, you name it, and the injunctions, the no-nos, the directions, you must, you don't, all that stuff. You primarily get that originally from a family group. Now, there are two types of scripts, according to the experts. Neither one of them sound very attractive to me. The banal script, an everyday melodramatic script with no clear beginning or end. You want that one? A hamartic script from the Greek, a script with a self-destructive tragic ending. This is the kind of scripts that most gamblers, all losing gamblers, alcoholics, narcotics addicts, anybody who's addicted to something that's self-destructive has what we call a hamartic script. And you end up, as the song Games That People Play went, you end up in the back of a black limousine. Loser scripts are very easy to determine. For instance, when you were a child, or when you look at other children, do you hear this? I'm trying, but I just can't seem to. And the parent or the authority figure says, oh, hell, here, stupid, I'll do it myself. What a disastrous thing to happen to a child, and it's happened so often, and it warps the rest of that child's life. I can't, I don't know how, show me, never mind, I'll do it myself. Okay, now let's get to find what are winners, what are non-winners, and what are just plain losers. Okay, a winner has stopped playing loser games. You can think of 101 loser games. You're playing them all the time unless you're winning consistently. And if you're winning consistently, you're probably not watching this tape. You've rewritten your loser script to conform to an autonomous way of life that follows your own guidelines that you have accepted and does it consistently. Now, a non-winner, and that's what we hope we're talking to most, not losers, but non-winners. People are on the road. They've not completely ceased playing games, loser games, but they do acknowledge them for what they are and carefully monitor themselves toward recovery and think of things in an adult state and stop looking at everything from a subjective, ego-centered point of view. Now here's an example. A winner makes commitments. A loser makes promises. Oh, boy, do I hear that a lot. Oh, boy, next week I'm going to start in doing just like you say. Yeah, boom, promise, promise. But they wake up in a new world, and they go right back to what they were doing before. A loser always says, oh, I tried hard. Tries harder than a winner, but does not do what is necessary. A winner says, I will and does. A loser says, I'll try and fails. Then says, but I'll try harder next time. Folks, it's an axiom in psychiatry, in psychology, in medicine that is pretty accurate. Trying is lying. To do is true. The guy who says, oh, I'll try. I'm going to try this. Well, I'm going to try harder. He's not going to try harder. He's not going to attempt. He's going to say, I try, but he's not going to do. Stop saying you're going to try and do. And you'll make it. Now some myths, some really tragic myths that destroy a horse player's, and I crossed off bankroll and put in confidence. Now I'm not denigrating the authors of some of these statements. They probably said a lot of good things in their books, but they occasionally came up with something that was totally not true, totally destructive of your confidence if you believed it. It was a tragic mixed message and you should kaput it. Dick Mitchell says, the very best professional players earn between 20 and 40% on their win bets. That's all right. Most average around 2 prime bets a day. Are you going to, that doesn't sound too good to me, 2 a day. I'd lose my mind just playing 2 a day. This means that if you're in the middle of this group, you're a superior handicapper and your ROI will be around 30%. Well, I wouldn't take less than 50 personally, but that's all right. How much do you have to put through the mutuals? And here's what I love, because I'm going to show this